You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the complex world of enterprise identity, securing legacy web apps at scale can be daunting. Strata Identity makes it simple. With Strata, you can effortlessly integrate non-standard apps with any identity service, like MFA or SSO, with zero coding and zero hassle. Designed by identity architects for identity architects, Strata works with every vendor, standard, and app architecture. This means your apps can now speak modern protocols and integrate seamlessly with your chosen identity services. From securing on-prem web apps to migrating away from outdated identity providers or consolidating them, Strata helps you keep your complex access policies as you modernize your identity infrastructure and get rid of technical debt. Join leading organizations like 3M, Dallas County, and CIBC in securing your apps with Strata. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your identity security priorities, and receive a complimentary pair of AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Connect today at strata.io/cyberwire.
Huawei is accused of aiding government surveillance programs in Zambia and Uganda. Cyber gangs are adapting to law enforcement, and they've turned to big game hunting to do it. They're also turning legitimate tools to criminal purposes. U.S. federal prosecutors indicate they intend to add charges to those the alleged Capital One bank hacker faces. And there's a new tool out there for detecting gas pump pay card skimmers. From the CyberWire studios at Data Tribe, I'm Tamika Smith, sitting in for Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Thursday, August 15th, 2019. The Wall Street Journal reports that Huawei has embedded technicians in the governments of Zambia and Uganda to help those governments organize and operate extensive domestic surveillance programs. The company has been working to gain a commanding presence in African markets. Meanwhile, Huawei denies any wrongdoing. A Huawei spokesman told the Journal the company never engaged in hacking activities in a statement. It goes on to point out, quote, Huawei rejects completely these unfounded and inaccurate allegations against our business operations. Our internal investigation shows clearly that Huawei and its employees have not engaged in any of the activities alleged. We have neither the contracts nor the capabilities to do so, end quote. Huawei has long been suspected of operating as a willing adjunct of Chinese intelligence and security services. The journal does not say that the operations in Zambia and Uganda were directed by Chinese intelligence, nor does it argue that there is anything about Huawei's technology that made it particularly adaptable to surveillance. But the Washington Post notes the lessons seem to be that Huawei is willing and able to work with repressive regimes. Chinese security services have established a template for repressive surveillance against its own Tibetan and Uyghur minorities. It may be that this template is now being exported. Accenture's report on trends in cybercrime suggests the possibility that criminal gangs are adapting their tactics to avoid detection and apprehension. Gangs like Fin7, the Cobalt Group, and the Contact Crew are increasingly turning to what Accenture calls big game hunting. Their attacks are growing highly targeted towards their victims. The gangs are using not only custom malware, but also commodity attack tools traded on the black market. The higher-end criminals, Accenture concludes, are adapting legitimate tools like Metasploit, Cobalt Strike, and Meterpreter to illicit purposes. It's also noteworthy that some of the gangs, including Fin7, have survived the arrest of some of their ringleaders and continue to prosper. There's an attack-defense seesaw, and for now, the attack side seems to be rising. New research points out that in 2020, there will be more positions in cybersecurity than people with the skills to fill them. Taylor Armerding, who writes about this topic for Synopsys, a software company, says his focus is on cybersecurity and privacy. How important are credentials in the cybersecurity field, especially when you start talking about a forecasted shortfall?
I would say they are important, but they're not as important as other things. In fact, there was a blog post on a site called Indeed that was saying one of the problems with job postings is that they tend to demand credentials that aren't really necessary. You know, I would say that you need some tech training and that sort of stuff, but you can be trained on the job. And then besides that, once you have done some work, credentials come with experience, I guess you'd say. You know, demonstrating that you can do a job is much, much more important than a degree or, you know, some other kind of certification, things like that.
Can you talk a little bit about the forecasted numbers in the shortfall? Because in your article here, it says that officials estimate that job growth in the sector is going to be at like 30%, 37% a year, at least through 2022. And that's conservative.
The U.S., the United States job shortage is an estimated 300,000 jobs. In other words, unemployment is below zero, which is kind of interesting. And worldwide, that figure is in the millions. Supposedly 2 years from now, one of the estimates I saw said that 2 years from now, the worldwide job shortage of skills will be 3.5 million. And I think that's because, as I said in that story, the threats are increasing. The bad guys and the tools that the bad guys use are more sophisticated. So the threats are expanding, they're increasing, and there's an increasing need for skilled cybersecurity workers. You may be familiar with the RSA conference, the annual conference out in San Francisco. That's probably the biggest security conference. I went to that for the first time about 6 years ago, and there were maybe, I think, 25,000 people. Now there's close to 50,000 people. So it is a explosively growth industry, I would say.
A lot of people who are volunteering in this field of educating and working with nonprofits to help get the youth involved, they're saying there's a lack of support in the public school system and in the education system altogether. Do you have any thoughts on that?
It seems like our legacy educational system is not designed for rapid response. Kind of gets entrenched in a certain model, which doesn't mean it doesn't do anything well. It does a lot of things well. But when something like this happens, you know, you've got a lot of teachers who have tenure and who aren't going anywhere for anywhere from 10 to 30 years. Meanwhile, the need for tech training for the STEM fields is explosively growing. It's one of those things that just, it's very difficult. It's like, you know, one of the images is trying to turn an ocean liner on a dime or something like that. It's just not geared for rapid response. That said, it does seem like there are all kinds of initiatives within the industry. There's people who are doing mentoring. It's happening. It's just happening in a very diversified and diffuse, and it's not kind of centered on our educational establishment, which I think will change, but it ain't going to change real quick, I don't think.
In your article, you mentioned the lack of diversity in this field.
Yes.
How do you suggest that challenge is tackled?
Part of it, I think, is awareness. Like just about anything, when people become aware of a problem, that's at least a first step. Because once they're aware of it, they at least have a tendency to support or even take some initiatives themselves. I mentioned in the story a guy named Gary McGraw, for a number of years, had a podcast called the Silver Bullet Podcast. And he decided, I think it was in 2017, to interview only women. and it was easy to find them. There were some outstanding female stars in the field. He said, I'm quoting, if you go to your typical panel at a conference, it's mostly men. There are women involved who can be role models, but we need to make sure that schools aren't set up to discourage that. You need to encourage minorities. You need to encourage women. They're just as smart as the guys are. But there has been, you know, a sense that this is a guy's field, and it must not be because there aren't enough guys to do it. You need everybody.
That's Taylor Armerding from Synopsys. An update on the case of the accused Capital One Bank data breach hacker. There's a speculation that Paige Thompson, who went by the online handle Erratic, was involved in cyber incidents affecting as many as 30 other organizations. Observers speculated the other incidents may have been exaggerated if they occurred at all. But this week, prosecutors filed additional court documents indicating that they had indeed found evidence of those alleged cybercrimes compromising other organizations. The Justice Department said most of the compromised files did not contain personal information, but they informed the court that they expected to file additional charges in the case. Thompson remains in federal custody. And some good news for cyber law enforcement. Credit card skimmers, the bane of gas station customers, can now be spotted with a tool called Blutana. The device is the product of joint research by the University of California, San Diego, and the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, with technical input from the U.S. Secret Service. Blutana seems to enjoy a high success rate, but there are legitimate devices that can look like card skimmers to the scanner. So the system gives investigators indicators as opposed to conclusive evidence that a skimmer is present on any given gas pump. That's still valuable. Blutana helps tell police that they should take a second look. The research surrounding Blutana suggests why criminals find it worth their while to deploy card skimmers at gas pumps. They realize a profit quickly. A principal investigator on the project wrote, based on the prior figures, they estimate the range of per-day revenue from a skimmer is about $4,200, and on the high end, an estimate of $60,000. And why gas pumps? For the most part, they're outdoors and unattended, so installing a skimmer is a low-risk, high-reward proposition. The U.S. Secret Service involvement isn't surprising. While the service is best known for presidential security, it's primarily responsible for investigating federal financial crimes, and it's often called in to look into cases of fraud at the gas pump. And if you're running a business in the United States, it may be worth the time to get to know your local Secret Service office.
And I'm pleased to be joined once again by Malek Ben-Salem. She's the Senior R&D Manager for Security at Accenture Labs. It's always great to have you back. You and I have been talking about the trip you recently made to RightsCon, and one of the topics of discussion there was how to deal with disinformation campaigns online. What can you share with us?
Yeah, so one of the interesting conversations in that conference was about, you know, freedom of expression on the internet versus censorship. The voices that are asking now for more control and more moderation of what gets published on the internet, in particular after all the disinformation campaigns that we've seen throughout election cycles, for instance, the video of Nancy Pelosi a few months ago. So the question is, how can we fight disinformation, whether there are any viable approaches, techniques, and can we do it without censorship, right? Without turning into, while keeping the internet the way we know it as a platform for free expression.
So what were some of the ideas tossed around?
It seems that there is a consensus that we definitely need to develop standards of internet transparency and integrity. We also need to limit space for impersonators. Existing platforms, anybody can create an unlimited number of accounts in an anonymous manner. The question is, do we need to have more checks to check that the people creating accounts are really, you know, physical people as opposed to bots, right, that can start building or propagating information without them representing people in the real world. So they don't reflect the public opinion in the real world.
Right. But then I suppose there are legitimate needs for anonymity online as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's really one of the advantages of the internet. That gets also, I guess, reflected by the development of platforms like blockchain and Ethereum, where you see platforms being created that are decentralized, distributed, and people can join anonymously. That reflects the need for anonymity. It's still a trade-off. I don't think anybody would say that we need to completely remove the ability for people to interact in an anonymous manner, but limiting the space for impersonators is what's needed. Limiting that space, meaning checking for bots that really have more harmful impact.
Yeah, I mean, what a challenge to try to have community standards when you have truly a global community.
Especially as we see also that the impersonation techniques are changing and are evolving, right? Mm-hmm. Now you see these bots infiltrating authentic social groups, right? So it's not like, one bot that's broadcasting wrong information on their own, but they're really infiltrating the more closed groups and domestic social media dialogue. How do you detect that? It's not straightforward, but I think we need to do more research and come up with some ways of, again, not completely limiting this, but perhaps limiting the space for these impersonators.
Yeah, it strikes me too that there's one of the things that by automating, the ability to automate these things, that enables an asymmetry that I don't know that we had to deal with before, that the scale and velocity at which folks who are out there to spread misinformation and so forth can do so, it's a different ballgame than it used to be.
Absolutely. The automation of the fast propagation of these of this misinformation is at an unprecedented scale, but also the automation of generating misinformation, automatically generating deepfakes, right? We've never seen that before, automatically generating videos that mimic a real person, that look really like a real person and that are hard to detect in real time. That's an absolutely new challenge, and it will continue to grow as we make use of, GANs, general adversarial networks, to perform or to build these deepfakes. So it's a challenge that will continue to grow, and we need to work with the social media companies to come up with some common standards where we can identify these deepfakes and synthetic data.
Interesting stuff for sure. Malek Ben Salem, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Dave.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire Daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.